So this is the Windows Everywhere session. And the idea here is mainly to use this as a starting point for you to then follow the rest of the tracks throughout TechEd this week. So Hannes and I are going to present today about this topic, cover Windows on a few different places. Those are our Twitter accounts there if you want to follow us as well. But welcome and thank you for coming in. Let's get into it. Hannes? Cool.
Thank you. So in terms of a brief introduction, my name is Hannes, this is Tiago. We are both technical evangelists over at Microsoft. Tiago takes care of cloud and my portfolio is mobility. Windows touches our lives everywhere we go. We want to take you today on a journey with us to go discover some of the weird and funky places where we find Windows, where Windows has a profound impact on our lives and on the things that we do.
So yeah, Hannes came up with that idea of saying that Windows touches everyone. But I like to think about it in a way that, we have Windows running on quite a few different places, some places you might not have seen before. And if you think back 30 years ago when Bill Gates mentioned that he wanted a computer in every desk and every home, we got pretty far into that vision that he had. We have about 1.5 billion people using Windows every day, and that's just that keeps growing. And that's about, if you think about it, it's about 30% of the population nowadays, over 20% of the population. Satya, our new CEO, he stepped it up a little bit by saying that we now want to have to be the key company that's going to bring productivity to every person and every organization in the world. And then we're hoping that in this session you're going to pick out a few other places where you could come with us into this vision and help bring productivity to everyone as well.
So agenda for today, we'll start off in the office. We'll look at some of the more traditional settings that we find Windows. Then we'll go home, go visit with our families, head out to the mall, see some of the more impactful plays that we have with Windows over there. And of course, every good presentation ends up in the clouds. So let's kick this off out in the office. We'll start by talking about the Windows we all love on our laptops and desktops. Now I'm guessing that most of the people over here have pretty much grown up with Windows being a part of their lives. This grand vision started all the way back in 1985 when we released Windows 1. Windows 1 is about 2 years after it was announced. We'll see there's a few screenshots in there of some other notable versions. We've got 95 over there, which was the last version built on MS-DOS. And we've got Windows XP over there, which was the first consumer-faced offering of Windows NT. So after about 29 years of building Windows, we ended up with Windows 8.1. Windows 8.1 was released earlier in this year, around February and so, and was a major update to Windows 8, which was released about a year and a half ago. Windows 8 has been given an interesting time by the press for the modern interface, but what I find when I speak to a lot of people is that they haven't actually given it a go. They haven't tried it. All they know about Windows is that there's this new tile interface, there's this new full screen view of doing apps, and it's scary. The reality about Windows 8 is that it's mostly like Windows 7. We've got our desktop, we've got our apps, we've got Windows, we've got icons pinned to our taskbar, jump lists, all the rest. But the thing about Windows 8 is that as much as it is Windows 7, we've done a lot of work to improve the productivity. This is just a small number of the features that we've added to it or improved in it, and you'll find that none of those are actually related to tiled interfaces at all. There's no tiles in there apart from the fancy picture that we've made. Some of my favorite productivity announcements is faster startup. Startup is now about half the time it used to be, and it's pretty cool how we did that. We basically use some of the technology that we use for hibernating and saving state down to basically come out of hibernation every time that you start up instead of reloading everything all the time. We've got cool new features and storage spaces, which we took out from Windows Home Server, which now lets you pull all of your storage in your computer together, so your SSDs and your mechanical drives, and make it, let you see it as one big area. It'll then intelligently optimize where files are based in that pooled storage space, that your files that you use more often goes onto your SSDs. We've done a lot of work in terms of security. We've got direct access in there now, which has been made possible by the use of virtual smart cards and a deeper integration with our trusted platform module. That's also allowed us to do something called trusted boot, which is really saying that your antivirus software now starts up before anything else. Again, it relies on a trusted platform module, which has some code in it that is used to verify the integrity of the boot sequence. But what that means is, who remembers the stoned virus from the 1980s? Switch on your XT and it just comes up with this message, you are stoned. That kind of software or hardware is really, that kind of virus is really hard to put on Windows these days, thanks to this trusted boot sequence thing that we've got. We've also now got Hyper-V client as a standard part of Windows 8. That's a great feature for developers because it allows you to take your virtual machines from Windows Server and just mount them inside your Windows 8 client installation that you're working with. It means that we no longer have to develop on server instances. We can actually now use a proper client version of it. Incidentally, if you put your computer to sleep, if you put your Windows 8 computer to sleep, it'll just put all of your virtual machines to sleep as well. It'll save their state down and put them to sleep. That's something that doesn't happen on Windows Server. So when you take Windows Server and you put it on your laptop to develop on, you lose certain abilities, like the ability to hibernate and to sleep and so on, which is a bit of a pain when it comes to battery management on modern laptops. Of course, Windows 8 is also on tablets. Now, the interesting thing here is that tablets is not new to Microsoft. Our first big play in the tablet space was in 2002 with the Windows XP Tablet Edition. Now, for various reasons, that didn't really take off, but it did set us on a foundation for excellent inking technologies. And those are the inking technologies that today form the base of technologies like OneNote and the stylus that we have on our Surface Pro 3. So most of you would have seen Emily play yesterday with, Michelle. Would have seen Michelle play with the OneNote stylus yesterday, typing some notes and stuff. Now, what's cool about that is that OneNote can actually convert your text from free-form handwriting to actual text. It can do OCR on the fly like that. And that's a lot of millions of dollars of research that went into that. It's a lot of years that went into that. And it all started in 2002, well, before 2002, with Windows XP Tablet Edition. Now, one of our customers, Royal Caribbean, is an interesting showcase for this Windows on Tablets vision. What they've recently done is they've committed to deploying Windows tablets to 40,000 crew members. These are custom-built tablets from a company called Hexa, and they run Windows 8. These tablets are given to crew to be used in their personal lives. They can use Skype and OneDrive to communicate with their families, stay in touch, share photos with them. But they can also do work on them. They've got Office on these tablets, and they've got their line of business applications. They've recently been working on a new ship called Quantum of the Seas. This ship is fully connected. It uses RFID to tag customers, to tag the baggage and stuff on the ship. Your customer would, instead of paying with credit card or doing something weird like writing their birth number on an order, they just use their RFID bracelet to tag into bars and to pay for drinks and stuff like that. They can use these RFID bracelets with the Windows 8 tablets to identify a customer and find out where his luggage is in the ship, what he's had for dinner, and give a much richer customer experience.
That doesn't mean we're not giving everyone a tablet this year, but for the bracelets, but hopefully
next year. I would love to. And so, yeah, so that's Royal Caribbean, how they're making use of Windows tablets. Now, related to this is running Windows somewhere else. What do we mean by this? Thin clients. Thin clients is a concept that's been around for a long, long time, long before Windows. Back when we had those green screen terminals, those were thin clients. They hooked into a mainframe, and the input got forwarded directly to the mainframe. Now, technology is circular, like most other things in life. And we went from those thin client terminals out to big clients where we've now got these kind of machines, and we kind of gone back to thin clients. Now, the thin clients of today isn't just the monitor and keyboard that we know that hooks in directly to a mainframe. There's usually another unit in it. HP, for instance, has a unit, the HP Flexible Thin Client, and these clients typically come with Windows Embedded Standard. We've currently got a version of that out, Windows Embedded 8 Standard, again, built on Windows 8. And what that has in it is a technology called RemoteFX. Now, when you combine RemoteFX with Windows 8, it means that you can do interesting things like render 3D graphics on the client side through remote desktop. It gives us bigger resolutions, better color, better input. It lets us forward USB input, which means that you can now use your smart card on a thin client to perform two-factor authentication. This wasn't possible before Windows Embedded 8 or Windows 8 and RemoteFX. Of course, thin clients doesn't just look like that. It's not just actual thin clients, but also phones. Phones like this one. Tablets like iPads, phones like iPhones, Android tablets. These are all the thin clients of today. And that's fundamental to this concept of bring your own device. BYOD is one of the big drivers of the thin clients of today. And so one of the things that we've done is we've now gone and built remote desktop for all of these other platforms. And what that allows you to do is to take all of your Windows infrastructure, your Windows applications, and actually run them on an iPad, something that doesn't have Windows at the moment. So we're bringing Windows to other devices. And there's a few other technologies in there that does the same thing. Now, let's talk a little bit about where this hosting of Windows happens. The one way in which we do it is remote desktop session. You've got Windows Server, and it'll fire up a new session. This is kind of similar to when you fire up the Windows 8 simulator on Windows 8 when you're writing apps for it, in that it just creates a new instance of the processes running on that particular instance of Windows. We've also got virtual desktops, VDI. This is more like virtual machines. Whenever you fire up whenever you connect to your VDI server, it'll fire up something similar to a virtual machine, and that's your dedicated space. It's got your own storage space. Nobody can intrude with you. So that's something that you'll more often use for kind of permanent VDI solutions, like in call centers and so on. Something that's pretty new for us is remote apps, and that is kind of like remote desktop sessions, but smaller, where instead of firing up a whole new session with all the bits and pieces that goes with it, you just get an instance of the app. And again, that means that you can do interesting things like run Word on your iPad without needing a whole bunch of server infrastructure to host virtual machines and host all this extra storage and stuff. It also means that your legacy application can run on your iPad and still have access to your local servers and your local file shares. There's one more that I want to talk about, Windows To Go. This is, again, new in Windows 8. It's only available if you've got Windows 8 Enterprise. But this is an interesting way to deal with desktop virtualization without dealing with all those devices. What you do with Windows To Go is you pretty much just install Windows on a flash drive like that. Now, it needs to be a special flash drive. It needs to be a USB 3 flash drive that's fast enough to run things. But you can basically install your own copy of Windows onto that flash drive and then boot to it from any other device. It ties in with the trusted boot stuff. So again, you've got a secure solution. And there's interesting options available from iMation. iMation is one of our sponsors. You can go check them out down in the hub at some point. But this particular drive over here is the W500. And what makes this drive special is that it's got hardware-level encryption. So you unlock it for your machine, you boot to it, you do your work and stuff. When you're finished and you plug it out, everything is still encrypted. You cannot actually get to the data in this device without knowing the PIN that goes with it. If you can set it up so that if you enter the PIN wrong three times, it'll either reset the device or it can actually destroy the device. So that, who remembers that Mission Impossible one where you've seen the message and the message will self-destruct in 5 seconds and there's the countdown and there's the burn. So it's not quite as dramatic as that, but it's the same kind of idea. So that's really valuable for people in the defense industries. If we think about again, when you're working in the defense industry, maybe you can have a few rooms full of thin clients that don't actually have storage. And you just give your staff these Windows to Go sticks. They plug it into their thin client, they do their work, they plug it out, and they take it with them. Their data is always with them. You don't need heaps of network connectivity. They can go home, they can work on their computer at home on this disk. And again, the data is on the disk and it's secure and it's safe. James Bannon is delivering a talk, Win 408, on how to configure these Windows to Go sticks. So have a look at that. Another mainstay of the office is the Windows Server. And the first big application for it is data. It runs SQL, it runs file shares. Windows Server is a great place to put your data. There's all kinds of new things that ties into the cloud, it connects the two up. In terms of keeping your data, that's really interesting, and Tiago will mention that a little bit later. But of course, it also runs your applications. Applications like SharePoint, Link Server, IIS, which forms the basis for a vast amount of enterprise software today. Finally, identity is one of the big, big plays of Windows Server as well. Active Directory is the undisputable king of identity in the enterprise space. And it's only getting better. With other identity technologies like OAuth coming out, Active Directory now supports that as well. And so it's now allowing us to take our identity off of our on-premises network, off of our corporate network, and expand into the cloud and into other companies through federation. The last one I want to talk about over here before we switch over to the home is Windows Phone. So Windows Phone is big on security, especially with our latest release. We've now enabled secure authentication for Wi-Fi networks through certificates. We've got VPN in there. And so security is a big thing. The devices can be BitLockered, so the whole device can be encrypted. Again, if you take the storage out, you can't actually get to the files without knowing the decryption keys. Management has been a big thing for Windows Phone now as well. Apart from improving the management experience through Intune, we've now enabled management through third-party suites like MobileIron and AirWatch as well. And then productivity, of course, is still the mainstay of Windows Phone. Windows Phone offers the best calendar experience, the best integrated messaging experience with services like Skype and Link. But also, when you put these three things together, you get to a concept called Information Rights Management, IRM. This is a really cool thing because it allows us to do something called selective remote wipe, which means that if I've enrolled my device into my corporate network, and it gets unenrolled, or disenrolled, removed, whatever the word is. If it gets removed from that corporate management thing, either the system or an administrator can do a selective remote wipe, which will go and remove all of my company data and applications off of my phone, but leave my personal things intact. So all my personal photos, all my things that I've stored on my personal OneDrive, all of that is still there. And that's just another way how we enable BYOD, but always keep the security in mind. So another weird office 10 kilometers up in the air is Delta Airlines. They've recently embarked on a program to give Windows phones to 19,000 flight attendants. Again, these Windows phones are enabled for them to do their personal things, to stay in touch with their families using Skype. It's also got Office. It deals with their email. What's interesting with these ones is that they also do point of sale on the airplane with these phones. Previously, you could have actually paid for your snacks using your gym card because there was no way to verify that it's an actual card. Now with these new devices, they've got actual point of sale credit card transactions on the device itself. It also tracks flight manifests, cargo manifests, passenger manifests, all that kind of stuff in there. We're also doing some work locally with one of our largest city councils who is currently deploying or busy with a program to deploy up to 4,000 Windows Phone devices to all their field staff. These Windows Phone devices will come with applications that integrates with CRM and various other backend systems and just make it so much easier for them to actually do the field work in the field. So let's switch over to home, to our partners.
Cool. So as you would have seen, Microsoft have this theme that shares both the interface but also the core of Windows across multiple devices. If you've been using Windows, who here has a Windows phone? All right. I'm preaching to the choir then, quite a lot of people. But as you would have seen, of course, from the phone to tablets to computers, and now even the Xbox, we have this theme, and it's pretty easy to see the direction that Microsoft are going with this. Not only the interface is the same or similar, just changing depending on the size of the screen that you have, but also the core behind it is also the same. And that is, you know, very good news for developers, because now developers can create what is called a universal app and build an application that is targeted at all of these platforms at the same time. So that cuts down quite considerably on the amount of time that the developer has to put into creating that solution. A couple of sessions that I wanted to call out for today. So there's the Win 106, where you can see all of the devices. So that's Nathan. He's going to be talking on Thursday at 9 a.m., and he's going to be showing quite a few of the new devices that we have, the ones that we've already mentioned, you know, new Windows phones, tablets, and et cetera, and also ruggedized devices and all that. But also designing successful consumer and line of business apps. That's on Thursday as well at 3:10 p.m. by Atta.
Yeah. We've also got some other speakers in the room here, Rob Tiffany over here, and Andy Wigley. You'll remember them from doing the jump starts on Windows Phone on Microsoft Virtual Academy. They've come down to New Zealand to come present a few sessions over here on universal apps, specifically universal apps and using SQLite, so enterprise universal apps. Andy has a session on advanced networking, so figuring out how to deal with latency and that kind of stuff. I'd highly recommend those sessions, and also try to hook up with them and ask them all those hard questions that I always don't come back to you with the answers. We've got a few other people here who's doing some sessions as well. Damon Kazan is talking about PhoneGap, so cross-platform dev using PhoneGap, writing that code to run everywhere. And then also Isaac McNewton is doing a session on Xamarin. So again, using C# to write code once, run it everywhere.
Cool. And also, if you look at, you know, where we are deploying Azure Windows, we have, I've been talking about Azure for too long. We're still missing phones here, but, you know, from the phones all the way up to 8 inches, and then tablets, hybrids, and notebooks, desktops, and all-in-ones, and then all the way up to now massive PPI devices, and, of course, your TV at home when it's plugged into an Xbox One. So definitely Microsoft is trying to reach all sorts of screen sizes and even things that don't have a screen, so small devices where you can still run a version of Windows and maybe connect it to the internet and build something that plugs into the Internet of Things.
So exciting announcements around that is that Galileo can now run full Windows. You can install full Windows on your Galileo developer board, which is an $80 board that you can get. Also, Stephen Elop just the other day, I think about 3-4 days ago, announced that we are now embarking on mass producing the PPI devices, the Perceptive Pixel devices. So those are big as 88-inch screens, full multi-touch screens. I think some of them have up to 100 touch points. Really interesting stuff there. And again, universal apps is going to be the way to target all this whole range of app of devices going forward.
And if you were a techhead last year, you would have seen one of example of those touch screens as well down in the hub. And another good, you know, pretty good news for us and for Microsoft partners that are building new devices is that Windows basically is free for the companies that are building devices for phones and tablets that are 9 inches or less. And basically we've had about 12 new OEMs, since we've announced this, we've had 12 new OEMs building new phones and quite a few new tablets being announced as well recently. So that, you know, is gonna go at the level of the breadth of the platform and getting Windows and Windows Phone a little bit more available to everyone.
Yeah, what this essentially means is that we can now actually hit the same price points as Android. So those $200 tablets, $150 tablets, they've become reality. We've also done a lot of work on Windows so that it can run on cheaper, slower, lesser hardware. So a number of manufacturers are now able to take the same hardware that they used for their Android tablets and just load Windows onto it, giving their users that choice and also reducing their manufacturing costs.
And of course, we wouldn't be able, you know, we'd be talking about Windows at home without mentioning gaming. If you're an app developer and you're looking at where the top paid and both in the top free apps are, that's definitely in the gaming categories for the Windows Store and the Windows Phone Store. So that's certainly a location to look into. And one example locally that I wanted to call out is a game called Major Mayhem that just came out 2 weeks ago, or 2-3 weeks ago, by a company, local company here called Rocket Jump. They've had over 300,000 downloads on the first 2 weeks and over 6,000 reviews with 5 stars on the store. So they've done really, really well. They had already the app or the phone game across a few other platforms, but as soon as it came out of Windows Phone, it picked up pretty quickly. And they went with the freemium model, which is the most popular one nowadays. So it's free for you to install, but there's bits and bobs in there that you can pay for new levels or new things that the Major Mayhem can buy.
Yeah. Incidentally, this game is also available on Windows 8. So if you've got a Windows 8 tablet, yeah, you can go download it from the Windows Store and have a bit of a play.
Mm. It's a really cool game. Mm. And of course, we've done quite a lot of work on Windows itself, especially Windows 8.1, to add extra support for developers to be creative and develop these apps. Basically, gaming has been a mainstay for Windows for a long time. As you know, you would have be playing games at home as well as on the Xbox, but also now on the 8.1 version of Windows, we've added quite a few extra things there. And one of the main things is support for Unity. Mm. And Hannes is going to tell us a little bit more
about that. Yeah, so Unity is it's basically a gaming platform. It's an easy way to build games using a Unity editor, which allows you to put things together, bring C# scripts in, or JavaScript, or Boo script. Who's ever heard of Boo? Anyway, it's in there. So it allows you to build games using these technologies that we know. But more importantly, that Unity has established a big asset store. So I remember back when I was a kid, when I was about 17 or so, programming away in Pascal and stuff. I had all these grand visions of one day becoming a game developer. In university, I tried to write a few games and stuff, but I always got stuck with the assets. I'm not much of an artist. I'm not much of a 3D man. I can't build the cool models. I can't record the cool sounds. What Unity has done with their asset store is they've enabled you to get that data. So if we think back to James Whitaker's talk about the data economy, Unity has set up an economy around these assets. So now today, if I want to write a game, I don't need to go build all these things myself. I just go off to the Unity asset store and I can get animations, particle effects, 3D models, all kinds of stuff out of there. So we've done a lot of work to enable Unity on our platform, to integrate with it really nicely. We recently bought a company called Syntax Tree, which built a tool that makes it easier to connect Visual Studio to the Unity editor. Unity by default uses mono editor. But now you can actually hook it up to Visual Studio for free. The other big thing about Unity is, according to the IDC, it's currently lying underneath 49% of games. So 49% of games today is built using Unity. This is big. I mean, if you think about all the games and all the app stores, there's a lot of them. 49% of them runs on Unity. The next big technology comes in at about 21%, which is custom engines. 21% of people today write custom engines. So have a look at Unity. It's really cool. There's a cool free version of it. And all kinds of plugins for the pro version. Connect for Windows has a plugin. Sphere Robotic Ball has a plugin. It makes it really easy to connect things up.
Cool. Just building out some of the extra features there. And then there's another session that I want to call out in the innovation track, which is about real-life SimCity 3D mapping and using Wi-Fi. And that's Hussein from Datacom. That is on Friday in the morning. It's going to be a pretty cool presentation, and it's also going to cover some of the stuff that we have added to Windows recently and how they've used that to enable the solution. So it's not only gaming that you use these features for, you can use it for really innovative ideas as well that you might have. And of course, from Microsoft itself, one of the very successful games is Halo, and we've released a version of Halo both for the phone and for Windows 8 that people can use. So that's been a very, very successful solution from Microsoft. And we couldn't be talking about gaming without mentioning the Xbox and the Xbox One. So it's definitely our next generation platform that we've released a few months ago. Has a modern architecture that's gonna take us through the next few years. At home, I use it both for gaming and also for applications, entertainment applications. It has support for Kinect, so you can do more natural interface. So whenever I get home, I want to listen to music, I just ask my Xbox to turn on and tell it to go to music. It picks up from wherever I stopped it last time and it keeps on playing. So it's really, really a great platform. And for me personally, you know, I talk about the cloud and Azure quite frequently. So it's really interesting to see how the basis of the Xbox One and the games that run there can take advantage of Microsoft Azure and the cloud. So if you would have seen the build keynote earlier this year, they showed how games like Titanfall are backed by Windows Azure or Microsoft Azure. For example, they had at launch to be able to cope with the load, they had about over 100,000 virtual machines on Azure supporting the session states of people that were playing Titanfall on the Xbox One. And that's quite a lot of servers, but you know, as the demand increases or decreases for the game, they can turn on and turn off those VMs behind the scenes.
Interestingly, while they were testing out Titanfall, they did actually once hit capacity in the European data center. Instead of dropping players and denying them access to the game, as happens quite often in other games when they start off, they merely moved some of the load over to Northern America. Those gamers didn't even notice. So again, seamless elasticity globally.
Yeah. Cool. And the other thing, of course, that you know, I mentioned already, the Kinect. But a cool thing about the Kinect is now we have Kinect for Windows. So Kinect's been used throughout the world for several different things, anywhere from helping us dock satellites to down to medical reasons as well. And we've been talking to a few people here that are already looking at purchasing Kinect for Windows, the latest version that we released, version 2, to build some local applications anywhere. One idea that someone mentioned once to me is he is going to use it to monitor people playing chess games on boards and then be able to interact and do alerts and keep tabs of how the game is going, for example. So you can think of using the Kinect for anything that requires that kind of features that it has. Yeah.
Baker has done a really cool simulator for doing training for people guiding airplanes in. So basically, you go with your arms and you do the signals and stuff, and then with Kinect, they pick that up, they pick up the gestures, they do some translation, and they move the airplane or the helicopter around as if though there's a pilot in there flying it, reacting to what you're doing. So you're not controlling it, you are actually guiding it, and the helicopter responds to it. And that's Kinect doing its magic over there. Now, what's cool about Kinect for Windows V2 is it's already gone on sale, but it's also coming with a new SDK. The SDK is still in beta mode. I'm not quite sure when that'll go live, but the beta SDK is available. And this beta SDK has two cool things in it. One of it is that it's now got support for Windows Store apps, which means that you can actually build a Windows Store app, put it up there on the store, and make that available to users who has a Kinect. So we're adding another way to interact with your store apps. The other cool thing about the Kinect is, again, Unity Pro integration. There's a plugin for it. You can quite easily now integrate it into your Unity games. Unity can be used to do Windows Store apps. So whether you do a store app or a game or whatever, you can use Unity, you can use Kinect, it's all really easy. And you can quite easily monetize your service or your application through our store.
Cool, so now when I asked you guys to raise your hand when you had a Windows phone, a lot of you did raise your hands, but I thought it'd be good for us to cover some of the basics of the latest version of Windows Phone as well. So we're just going to show you a little demo of some of the features that we think are pretty cool on the phone. Okay, that was mine.
So, Windows Phone. I like the blue interface. One of the cool things is if I change the color of my screen, the start and theme, at the moment it's cyan over there. If I were to change that to pink, then after a while that would sync down to my Windows 8 machine. And all my Windows 8 machines suddenly get pink. So we'll leave that there for a little bit. Now, one of the other cool things over here is these live tiles. They've been around for ages, but what we recently did with 8.1 is we now implement the same tile templates as you do on Windows 8. So when you're writing your universal apps and you've got your services and stuff in the back end, you can actually use the same templates to send updates to your Windows Phone and your Windows 8 apps. It's also vastly expanded then. Another cool thing in here is the new Action Center. Love this thing. It's made it actually really easy to interact with other apps and stuff on the phone. Now, we'll see over here that the store has put some actions in there. One app has been updated, one app needs attention. Previously, my apps would just kind of stay unupdated until I eventually noticed that there's a badge. My wife would never update her apps. I actually, once a week, just took her phone and updated everything for her. Now I've got auto updates. In this case, though, the Tweetium app needs to... It's still a beta app, so sometimes there's an error or two trying to update it. But if an app has changed its security permissions, so it needs extra permissions, so maybe it now needs location, maybe it now needs access to your contacts and so on, then you'll have to come in here and you have to give it that permission. Because that's, again, at the center of our app store, is the user is in control. The user always knows if all the apps have access to. So we're running a little bit tight on time, so I'll cut this demo over there. But again, go to Nathan's session, all the devices, and he'll give you a really good demo of a whole bunch of the other features and stuff that's available on Windows Phone.
Okay. And the next slide the next demo we wanted to show, you saw the Surface being shown yesterday during the keynote, so we're also going to keep this short, but I wanted to show you how I use mine as well. Switch over. Okay, so this is my Surface Pro 3 running here. I use it quite a lot to just do emails while I'm traveling and on the plane as well. One cool thing that now they allow you to have light devices and you can use them throughout the flight without having to shut it off while you're taking off and landing. I usually basically just remove the keyboard while it's taken off and landing so that they think I'm just using a normal tablet. And the apps that I have here, some of the apps that I also have on my phone as well. So I use NextGen Reader for reading RSS feeds. And this syncs through my Feedly account. It'll bring up all of the RSS feeds that I have. If I read it on the phone, then it marks it as read and it doesn't show up here as well. The other apps that I like here, one is Met Service, so that it's been developed locally, an app for the Met Service, and it's on Windows Phone and also on Windows 8. And that basically you choose your favorite cities, and it's going to show you what the weather's like. And of course, if you keep scrolling to the right, you'll see a lot more information about the forecast. Extended forecast in the next 48 hours. So it's a really, really cool built app locally for the Met Service, and it's both on Windows Phone and Windows 8. And because of the new form factor, I quite like to use it to read. So I use a few apps here that I like Flipboard and the Kindle app for the books. So I just use it as a normal reading platform as well. But whenever I need, I plug it back into at work. I plug it in to a USB hub that has a connection to a keyboard and a mouse, and I can just work on it, you know, on normal Windows apps as well, the usual old school, or what are they called, Hannes? The other Windows apps. So, like for example, here I have Spotify running. That doesn't have a version for Windows 8 or for Windows Phone, but I can still run it in the background if I have to. But most of the time I see on the Surface when I'm using it as a tablet, I stick with the universal apps. But if I have to, I can still use the Spotify or Outlook on the regular apps as well.
I want to quickly show you a very handy shortcut that few people know about. If you right-click on the Start button, you get this list of handy things over there. If you don't have a keyboard attached, if it's a tablet, you can just long press on the Start button and you'll get this thing. And that's just a quick and easy way to go jump to things like Control Panel, Device Manager, all those kind of deeper things.
Yeah, that's what I use the mobility center usually to turn on presenting mode, for example.
Yeah.
It's a good tip.
Okay.
Cool.
So let's head back to our presentation, which is that one, number 8.
Okay. So in summary, for the home, as you can see, we have Windows running from phones all the way up to the Xbox and everywhere in between. But a good thing to keep in mind is the rest of the platform that Microsoft has built that you can plug into as well. Most of them have APIs that you can create and expand what we built. So things like Bing and the Bing network you saw yesterday during the keynote from James, the stuff that he was doing to extend Outlook and Twitter using the Bing platform, but also Skype, Xbox games, the OneDrive, and Office and Internet Explorer.
Cool. So let's head out to the mall. So before we get to the mall, we're already dealing with some more Windows as well. In 2011, Nissan released a Leaf. The in-car entertainment systems were built on Windows Embedded Automotive. There's a few other companies who've done that as well. Ford and Kia both have solutions running on Windows Embedded Automotive. And it's a great solution for those companies. It allows them to upgrade the whole operating system and get new features and so on. Then when we look in the car parks these days, we'll find that there's all those little green lights on there. That's a place where we can use technologies like Windows Embedded Compact and .NET Micro Framework to control those things. Those little lights can go into a special version of Windows Server for Embedded, so we can have that server version set up there and it can run Microsoft SQL for Embedded. Who knew that they were there? But yeah, you can use those things there, aggregate that data, and then use that to push data out to our digital signs that tells you how many parking spaces are available. You can also use those to feed your web services, your websites, that allows a user to write an app to take him to the nearest parking space, to tell him how much parking where will cost, how long it'll take to get there. Again, we can make that data available so that people can build an economy around it. So once we're in the shop, in the mall, we can find a few new places that we've got windows there as well. Now, one of the big things in the retail industry that we've seen at shows like the NRF, the National Retail Federation show in the US, is this desire to further enable your shop floor assistants to help their customers by connecting them to all of the data and information that we've got available, not just about our products, but also about our customers. Right? So if a shop floor assistant can walk to a customer with his tablet and see the purchase history of this customer, he can then make intelligent suggestions for cross-selling and upselling to this customer. If the customer is looking at shoes, the shop floor assistant can know what size shoe this customer usually buys, and he can just say, hey, let me go get you the number 22s. So that's one way you can do that with tablets. We've got really cool tablets coming out running Windows Embedded Industry. But we've also got new handhelds that's just been announced. So that particular picture over there is the Panasonic FZ-E1. This is one of the first handhelds that's running Windows Embedded Handheld. Now, Windows Embedded Handheld is built on Windows Phone 8, so they run the same apps. You don't need to learn new skills for it. It's got a few less restrictions in terms of what you can do on those apps, because typically those apps would be sideloaded onto the device. It's also got a few features that makes it easier to provision these devices to your employees and for employees to switch profiles on the same device, so to share the device around. Now, of course, this device over here is pretty rugged. It can survive a 10-meter fall down onto concrete. It can be held underwater for 30 minutes. You can use it with gloves outside in the rain, pouring rain on it, and it'll just work. Really cool device. They're coming with built-in barcode scanners as well, really high-quality 2D and 1D barcode scanners that'll just keep on working no matter how manky the barcode is that you're trying to scan, and it'll do so quickly. What we've also got over here is a point-of-sale terminal. Now, that's a place where you want to use something like Windows Embedded Industry. Windows Embedded 8 Industry is built on Windows 8. Again, it runs the same applications, either store apps, which you sideload, or Windows 32 applications. But where it's different is that it's got a whole extra set of technologies to lock it down. So remember how James said yesterday Stephen Martin said yesterday about spending $3 for internal security for every $1 of external security. This is where you do that. A little while ago, there was a company called Target in the US who lost some credit card information for their customers. And what happened there is that a vendor came in and made alterations to their point of sale hardware, injected some code in there. That's quite easy to do when you're using a client desktop operating system and you don't switch the PC off and you don't log out and you don't take care of these things. Windows Embedded 8 Industry has things that allow you to lock the computer so that it will only allow you to interact with one application. It'll hide away the dialogues. It'll hide away all kind of other things. It's got write filters for the hard drive, so even if you do manage to load software on it, on the next reboot, it loads it out. It loads everything from a fresh copy. So whatever you wrote to the hard drive previously just gets thrown away. It's got filters for the USB port so that you can set it up so that it only reacts to a particular kind of device or a particular brand of keyboard. If you plug a flash drive or anything else in there, it just ignores it. Nothing happens. Now, Windows Embedded 8 Industry also is the way that we'll be doing ATMs. A lot of ATMs still run on XP Embedded. The new thing for that is Embedded 8 Industry. Again, all that same lockdown features. Now, you can imagine that for ATMs, it would be pretty important for randoms to not be able to drill a hole in the side, plug a USB keyboard and mouse, and start doing stuff on it. I've got a really cool video that I often show about someone in Russia playing Angry Birds on an ATM. Yeah, that's always an eye-opener. So, of course, as we walk around in our mall, we also encounter digital signs. Now, the old way to do a digital sign is to take a TV and to plug a USB drive in it, which has some videos on it. And you just play these videos on a loop. Well, we can get a lot smarter with digital signage these days. If we take our digital sign and something like those thin clients that we spoke about earlier, or something like the Intel Nook, we can load either Embedded Compact onto it or Embedded Standard, Embedded Industry, any one of those operating systems, and we can write software for it that makes it smart, that connects it to our systems, that connects it to services that profile our customers, and we can use things like Connect to control it. This picture over here is of a customer with a pink jacket on, standing in front of a digital mirror. It uses something like Connect to scan the customer, and she can change the color of the jacket that she wears. So she can cycle through the whole catalog. If you look at a company like EasyBuy, for instance, over here, which is a sales catalog company who also have stores, they don't have their whole catalog in the store. They don't have all that product there. So you can go in there, and you can try on a lot of it, but not all of it. So this is the kind of solution that will enable that company to let you come in and see what you look like with all of the catalog, but without all the costs of carrying all of that stock in store. So let's head up in the cloud, because all of these devices, of course, are generating telemetry, and they need to be connected to services, and the best place to put these services is in Tiago's backyard.
All right. So, as you might have seen from yesterday, and especially from Steve Martin's keynote, Microsoft is investing heavily into a huge infrastructure globally for our data centers and the connectivity between them, and the connectivity between you guys as well, you know, your local on-premises implementations and our data centers. So the Australia is there already in this list. We are going live in Australia before the end of the year. We're already running an internal preview there as well for some select customers from New Zealand and Australia, so it's not too far. And we have quite a lot of cloud services that Microsoft have built on top of the infrastructure, including Azure, of course. But some really, really huge numbers there from the infrastructure and the solutions that we've built. For example, Outlook.com has over 400 million accounts enabled, and 1 in 4 enterprise customers are running Office 365, which is a considerable number. If you look at some of the, a lot of the services that Microsoft have built for Windows Azure, we have anywhere from platform to infrastructure as a service, and there's quite a few sessions here during TechEd that can talk you through all of these in a lot more detail. And one that I wanted to call out is Microsoft Azure Remote App, because we talked about RDS and thin clients. So Azure also has a solution that doesn't allows you not to have to worry about the infrastructure behind the scenes that will run the RDS for you. It's currently in public preview, so you can go and start play with it, but you know, in a few months it should go general availability. There's some of the features up there that you know that what it does, and this is just a quick look at the infrastructure of what Azure Remote App can give you. So basically we have a predefined image that Microsoft have built that you can go with, and that allows you to run apps from Microsoft like Office, for example. So if you want to have clients from iOS, Android, Windows clients running a version of the Office apps, for example, you can do that quite easily with Azure Remote App. You can also upload your own image with extra applications from your backend up to an image, a gold image that you give to Azure, and it takes care of the scalability of it, you know, running that whole thing, the infrastructure behind the scenes, also gives each user 50 gigs of storage that they can use for the applications that they build. And if you connect it to on-premises via Azure VPN or and also through Azure Active Directory, you can even enable a sort of single sign-on with the same username and password that they have on-premise, but they can also access local files that you would have on-premises as well. So as your user needs to send something to print or needs to access a local file and a file share that you have on premises, that's also possible with this. So Remote App is definitely a really, really cool feature to look into that plugs into that. So I guess in a couple of minutes, I'll just do a very quick demo of Microsoft Azure. And I just want to show you a couple of things. Here we go.
Okay.
So this is the new portal. I quite like the black theme for it. But as you can see here, I have some virtual machines deployed, four of them, IIS demo 1, 2, 3, and 4. And they're all connected up into the same domain name, which is IIS demo Thalme 1. So if I put them all behind the same load balancing set. So if I keep refreshing this page, eventually it's going to change to a different server. So they're all running IIS on Azure virtual machines, but behind the same load balance set as well. So you can definitely scale out the applications like that. Of course, for websites like this, I probably wouldn't use virtual machines unless you need to have access to remote desktop into it, change the details, change the specific configurations of Windows and IIS. But as you saw yesterday from the keynote, there's the higher end services is a big focus now for Microsoft and other cloud vendors as well. So I would recommend if you're building websites, maybe look into Azure websites as well. So there's another demo that I have here that has the same website deployed to West US, as you can see from the URL, hopefully, and East US as well. They're both using the same running the same WordPress site. And one cool feature behind the scenes that we've built is that if you go into one of these posts and post a comment, we have a little web job worker behind each one of the websites that then sends the comment to the other one and keeps them in sync as well. So on top of these two URLs, we added them to a feature of Azure called Traffic Manager. So the actual URL that you would give your customers is a custom domain name that you configured against Azure Traffic Manager. They browse to that, and they'll be redirected to the version of the website that is closest to them or, you know, from a ping perspective, so the most performant one based on where they are. So if I browse through the trafficmanager.net website here, it's exactly the same website that the other two are running, but depending on where I am, I'm going to be redirected to one of those. So think about it as Microsoft Azure. It runs both Windows and Linux VMs, it runs websites, as you can see here, I'm running WordPress that can take any type of language from Java to .NET, PHP, and a few others. But behind the scenes, it's running Hyper-V, so still Windows in there quite considerably. So the same technologies that you have on premises now are also running up on Azure in the cloud.
One of my favorite Azure things is the new Azure Mobile Services. It's basically a backend in a box. If you want to write a little mobile app, do some prototyping, show something to your boss, try and have a look at those Azure mobile services with a web API stuff. It'll make it really easy to, within a few hours, set something up that does that has a SQL backend, so store your data, do authentication using Facebook, Twitter, AD, Windows Live, all those options, and then also give you the source code or the sample code to connect your iOS app and your Android app up to it. And we're talking about native iOS apps, and so it's Objective-C and Java code. There's also the Xamarin code if you're a diehard C-sharp user. Xamarin will let you do that stuff across all those sample apps. But really, backend in a box there, great for prototyping, great for getting something up and showing to the boss and turning those screws so that they give you the money to go and develop that over a few years.
And they've added a lot of enterprise features as well to that. I guess the first one is scale, so it will auto-scale for you to millions and millions of users. It now has both Node.js and ASP.NET backends for you to build the API that mobile services support. And it now also has a feature called BizTalk Hybrid Connections that allows you to also connect to a server that you have on premises to say if there's data that you can't move up, that allows you to do both websites and mobile services connecting to a database that's on premises through a secure link that it creates for you behind the scenes. So definitely worth having a look. And I didn't, there were too many Azure sessions to call out. So have a look on the website and filter by the Azure virtual track to see, which bits from today that you picked out that sounded interesting, and then go and have a look at those the sessions that we have.
Cool. Resources, Microsoft Virtual Academy. It's awesome. I learn a lot of stuff from there myself. Yeah. Of course, the TechNet Virtual Labs will let you go play with all of these handy technologies. And please, please do subscribe to the TechNet and MSDN flashes. TechNet for the technical audience, MSDN for the dev audience. Yeah. I often get asked, why don't you announce when you have events? Why don't you tell us when things are happening or when we can get stuff? Well, we do. It's in those flashes.
And that's, it's built by our team here, so that we write the editorial every week or two and send it out. And Hannes, myself, and the rest of our team write it. So it's definitely worth checking out and subscribing to.
Yeah, so sessions on demand, you'll be able to revisit this session over and over. I didn't know we were going to get videoed. That was a pleasant surprise. But yeah.
That's all right.
Session evaluations, yes. Very, very important. Go do it. We've got prizes, great prizes. So go do your session evaluations.
And again, just if you want to get in contact with us on Twitter, we just gave you an indication of what areas you might want to talk to us about. So Hannes, he knows everything about Windows apps, from Universal Apps, phone, client, and I look after Microsoft Azure and the cloud, but of course, contact us about anything, and we'll be happy to chat. Great, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And if you have any questions, let us know.
See ya.